Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, April 15th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here, located in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Just click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon-Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. If you'd like to get us a comment or a question, but you cannot call directly or you prefer not to, you can send an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And you can email Jeannie at janie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And when we get your question or comment, we will address it on the internet show. And then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. And we appreciate whenever anybody does that, primarily because it just makes it so much easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be a service, and it's just so much easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you and or how we might specifically help you in any particular issue you're working on or struggling with, and or any direct application of these tools, whether it's the Reality Management Worksheet or the targeted journaling that Michael Rice calls the Mind Shifter tool, or the Three Early Memories of Conflict tool, or the Mind Goal Management Worksheet from the Getting the Stress You Need workshop, and the list goes on and on. There's a tool called Responsibility Communication. There is the Codependent to Interdependence worksheet, and several others that we talk about and work on in due time throughout the course of our internet radio show or support groups. And if you have any comments or questions about any of those, we'd be happy to hear them. And I'd be very happy to support you in either learning about those tools or refining your ability to get best effect or results from those tools. The there's just so many thoughts bubbling through my mind right now about different ways to go. I've had yet a couple more people I was dealing with this morning who are, in their own rights, by societal standards, above average intelligence and attractive and high functioning, and they don't feel good about themselves. And I was left wondering about the dynamics in our culture which lead to that. And one of the biggest ones that I'm aware of is the tendency for us to do comparison. And all the great spiritual teachings talk about how it is not beneficial to compare yourself to others. Guy Finley has a talk in which he has the line, most of your emotional and psychological pain is the bitter fruit of a comparative life. It just doesn't pay any good dividends to anyone, anywhere, to compare yourself to other people. And the truth of that, the same wisdom is contained in the Way of Mastery in the third lesson, where it says, every judgment, every level of judgment is the opposite of love. It's the opposite of forgiveness. It's the opposite of just allowance and surrender to the flow of life. Every time I think life shouldn't be the way it is, or I should be better or worse, or someone else should acknowledge me more or less than what they already have, what I'm doing in that moment is judging. And in Lesson 3 of Way of Mastery, it says, judgment is, it will take you instantaneously to the other side of the universe from where you say you want to be. Judgment instantly brings about fear. Judgment is born of the process of fear, of the idea of separation. There, you can't have comparison unless you've bought into the dream of separation. And what we were reading in the Lesson 16 from the Way of Mastery last time we left off was the part where it says fear causes condensation, contraction, falling, if you will. And what you fall into is a matrix of energy that best resonates with your own perception and your belief about yourself. It says, belief is not just thought, belief is a quality of vibration. And you fall yet again into a field of energy, into a dream, into a physical universe, into a time frame, into a family structure that resonates and vibrates with how you have learned to perceive yourself. And while you are yet that one, you remain connected to your source, which is radiant, perfectly free, and you're using the very power of creation to create and believe in a dream of smallness, weakness, and separation and loneliness. Even as you hear these words right now, that's what you're doing. You're choosing how you will think of yourself. You think of yourself, and how you think of yourself is reflected in the world that you see, in the experiences that are manifest within your own particular universe of consciousness. Well, that's what I was talking about with these people that I was dealing with earlier today. They literally don't have the energy to feel good about themselves. They're so drained, they're so tired, they're so stuck in the rut of thinking that life should be different and comparing themselves to others and worrying, is this it? Is my life never going to get any better than this? And what we teach people and talk about in this was every time I engage in a negative thought, I'm spending more energy. I'm not gaining energy, I'm spending energy. I'm draining my energy every time I pour my mind energy into a negative thought. So the idea is, if I want more energy, I have to, number one, choose the positive thoughts, choose gratitude soon and often, choose appreciation soon and often. And then I have to allow for the fact that as long as I'm in a physical body, there are limitations to how much energy I can generate within a certain period of time. I need to give myself permission to rest. I need to give myself permission to let these intense emotional energies move through me rather than tighten down and tighten the breath and clamp down on my physical energy system. If you knew that you were connected to your source, if you could consciously keep that awareness top of mind, then you would never fear whatever happens in your life again. If you understood how deeply your thoughts about yourself are reflected in the world around you, and the beliefs and the energies, this vibrational pattern that you buy into is reflected in the world around you, then you would never fear what is created and what is missing. Because you would understand that nothing of value can ever be taken from you, and nothing of true value can ever be added unto you. The text goes on and says, if you knew that you were the unlimited one, that you were connected to your source, then you would never fear the creation of the golden coins again. You would never believe that you must live in lack. But you are still, for the most part, clinging to the belief that you're that small little thought of separation called the egoic mind. And you're struggling to find your creator. You're not recognizing that it is the very power of the Creator's presence from which you create the perception that you hold of yourself. So there you are, standing, sitting, walking, and you are connected to your Creator. You are in form. And that is, you've created a perception of yourself that includes the experience of being a body-mind, which is separate from all other bodies. it's separate from the rock. Obviously, you can look out your window and you can tell where your body is and where the wall is and where the window is, and you can point to every other object on this visual spatial plane. That's what the world is. This universe is an attempt to create a reflection that convinces you that the first fearful thought of separation is the actual truth of who you are. You are using, or you have unwittingly been using, your physical universe to constantly reflect to you what must be the truth. Lowercase t, small t, truth. The truth that you're separate from all creation. So you're using creation as you experience it in your perception to convince you that you're separate. The text goes on and says, this world is nothing but the reflection of that thought. And yet even here, capital T, that, capital O, one, that one, all of God, all of creation, all of consciousness, pervades all things. And the realization of your true self as being connected to that one, that realization is closer to you than your own breath, and it's simply a decision away. It is absolutely possible for you to have the experience of yourself as connected to your source, as perfectly safe in each new present moment. It's only a decision away. And the text goes on and says, here is the great richness that's not found in any other dimension. It's the richness of the dramas of separation, the dramas of seeking and seeking and seeking. For example, one who is seeking will say, quote, well, I've read A Course in Miracles one time and it didn't seem to work. I'll read it again. Oh, no, that didn't work. Well, maybe I'll try this form of meditation. No, that didn't work. Maybe I'll try Buddhism. No, that didn't work. I'll try Christianity. No, that didn't work. Wait a minute, I'll try drugs. That'll do it. Close quotes. The very energy of seeking is the egoic energy. For only the ego can seek. Pure spirit can only extend. And there is a huge difference. Egoic consciousness plays itself out through the forms of what we call special relationships. You have a special relationship with your employer. You have a special relationship with your spouse. Special relationship with your lovers, your car, your boats, and your automobiles. And the world plays off of your need for specialness, such as, quote, look at this automobile. Isn't it sexy? And you're going to feel so good. Close quotes. And so you seek to create the means to possess that certain automobile. Or you think, quote, if only I had that person as my spouse. Let me seek that one by seducing that one. I'll act as though I'm other than my poor, paltry, lonely self so that they think I'm grand. I'll ruffle up my peacock feathers, and that'll get them to like me. Close quotes. And on it goes. The world is the reflection of the belief in the need for special relationship. The search for that is the restlessness that you feel, the restlessness that you feel in the mind that creates the waves of restlessness in the fluids and the subtle energies which are contained within and make up the illusion of the body. The restlessness of the breath, the tightness of the muscles, the loneliness as you rest your head upon the pillow at night. For you believe that you are nothing but that body mind, separate and alone, apart from all others. Of course, it's not true, and yet you create the experience by living in the dream of separation. The text goes on and says, the infinite eternal stream of communication that occurs throughout creation, which is unobstructed, is lost to your awareness because you're focusing on the dream of separation. Yet it's there, so close to you, it requires only a thought to shift the momentum in a new direction. And you might want to rest your head on the pillow and say, quote, I am not just this body-mind. I am that one, pure, unbounded, and undefiled. I am in communication with every rock and every tree and every time frame that has ever been. You might want to say that. And yes, when you begin that thought, it will seem completely insane. And that's because you've been on the other side of the fence looking at reality from a certain perspective. It fits like a glove upon the hand, but that does not make it right or true. Insanity seems sane to those who are insane. So that is just the way it is. The end of all seeking comes from choosing to live as though you are not the ego. That's the title of the next section of Lesson 16 in the Way of Mastery. The end of all seeking comes from choosing to live as though you are not the ego. And the text reads, but the end of all seeking occurs when one dares to hold within the mind an entirely different thought. You've heard it said many times through A Course in Miracles, through many of my other channels. And here's what you've heard said, quote, only love is real. You are not the body. I and my creator are one. I am awake and I walk this planet as Christ. I choose love over fear. Close quotes. What does that mean? Love is pure spirit. Fear is contraction, density, false perception, and egoic consciousness. When you choose love over fear, you must decide not to respond according to the momentum of your egoic consciousness. You must decide to live as though you are not the ego. In this way, what has been formed becomes transformed. That which pervades and extends beyond what has been formed is transformed. The way of transformation, then, requires that you begin with the acceptance of what is true always. In this lesson, we have brought to you a story, an analogy, a description that can help. If you will sit with it, it can help to imprint into your consciousness a remembrance of the very process that you have, in fact, felt and experienced as creation itself. In creation's desire to create, in her desire to create, in his desire to create. Put it any way you wish. That one becomes what you perceive as the many, and yet it remains always the one. That is what you are. You are the song of the bird. You are the radiance and warmth of the sun as it touches the skin. You are the skin. You are the awareness of that warmth. You are the thinker of the thought. And you are the thought. You are the deed. You are the space from which all thought emerges. You are the wind in the trees. You are the vastness of space. You are that one that is eternal. You are the one bold enough to dream the dream of separation without ever losing perfect unity. You are the one, the little drop of milk, experiencing the remembrance of the divine, of the real, of the true, of the one. Your journey is not alone. Even now, you are perfectly awake, for only one who is awake could dare to create the great cleverness, creativity, through which you, as a spark of the divine, become increasingly aware of your capital S self. Creation diving into creation. Creation discovering creation. What a delightful, delightful play. Here then, we begin to let the secret out of the bag. Separation was not because you sinned. Separation was not because something terrible went wrong. Separation was just another form of the dance of creation itself, perhaps taken to extremes. For creation seeks the limits of what is unlimited. You have been playing a game of, quote, hide and seek, close quotes. You are the one, capital O one. You are all of consciousness, with its eyes closed, leaning against the trunk of a tree, counting, while fragments of your little self run and hide. And you are the one, capital O one, who has reached out to discover those fragments. And you are in the process of doing that. You are that one who's become the many, and then has waited to be discovered by that one. You are the soul waiting to be touched by grace. You are the separate, capital O, one, hiding in the darkness, trembling, and yet wanting light to find you. Why not begin now, in this moment, by sitting quietly as Christ for 5 minutes? And say to the one who is coming, now from the trunk of the tree, say this, quote, I have done a very good job of hiding, but you know, I think it would be a great delight to be found. Find me, dear Creator. Touch me with your grace. Because I am you, I will decide to receive it. In this moment, I choose now to remember that I am that one who has both sought and found. I am that one who has remained perfectly unchanged forever. And I am that one who has perceived my capital S self as having changed, as having sinned, and as having separated from myself. I choose now to join the two parts of myself together. I will be a body-mind upon this planet, dancing, singing, playing, and creating the good, the holy, and the beautiful. I will now open that part of my mind that can think in unlimited ways, that will dare to dream the impossible dream. I am that one who lets the creation live in me now. I and my Father are one. I am the drop of milk, again settling into the fullness of the glass in which my Creator dwells as milk. When I walk with this body upon the earth and I feel the mist of the fog upon the skin, I will say within myself, ah, yes, it is very good. For I am that one with the power to create this body, to create the mist of the fog itself. And the mist of the fog around me is the Creator's presence in which my soul reclines. This world is no longer a burden. This world of space and time is no longer something from which I must escape. Not even sickness or disease is a limitation for me. For wherever I am the presence of love. And this moment, I bring forth love and bless the world I see. Close quotes. And in this, the creation remembers the Creator. For beloved friends, the way of transformation must bring you, in the end, to a quiet recognition that there is only this one creation. Why would we fear if capital L love is here? There is only love or fear, which we've talked about as a contraction away from love, from the real energy of life, of creation. Peace then be unto you, beloved and holy friends. We say friends because you are part of me and I am a part of you. Particles of light dancing in the wave of the one of creation, the one mind, the one truth, the one real world. The joke has been on us, and we played it upon ourselves well. Now the time of rejoicing is at hand as we arise in our individuation, recognizing our oneness, to dance the dance of creation, ceaselessly extending the good, the holy, and the beautiful. Peace be unto you, the only begotten of creation. Creation is. Amen. So that's the completion of the first read-through of Lesson 16. And again, we're called time and time again throughout the lesson to recognize what we are doing with our mind energy as a creative force. If we choose to believe we're separate, we create the experience of being separate. If we choose to create the experience of being confused, we create the experience of confusion. As I talked about last week, confusion, I have come to discover for myself that I've never really been confused. What I've been calling confusion is the state in which I want to avoid seeing and acting from my highest guidance. Because I've gotten some kind of an intuitive hit, I've gotten some kind of a clear inspiration or insight that tells me to do something that's not so easy to do. That another part of me doesn't want to have to give up some level of comfort or some familiar relationship or some financial potential gain. And time after time, when I'm willing to do the reality management worksheets around a situation that I say has me confused, what I've discovered is I'm not really confused at all. I'm just facing something that my higher self or my insider intuition tells me I should do, and another part of me doesn't want to do because it's not going to be easy and convenient. I wish there was a way to quickly convey the whole series of different situations that I've been through since recognizing through these teachings that this emotion of overwhelm, the feeling of overwhelm, and the feeling of confusion are just my own creation. And being willing to put the situation and the thought and the emotion on the reality management worksheets. And I just had three or four of them pop into my head. And, you know, each of them would take, you know, a bit of time to talk about. And yet, every one of them, it follows the same pattern. I'm left to just guess that if I had been introduced to this earlier in my life, I probably would have realized every time I had confusion, it was just that I was trying to turn away from a strong knowing that was inconvenient. In one such situation, I had worked for a little over 2 years, giving, you know, hours of my time every week to a project, and, you know, all kinds of positive potential for this project, all kinds of high hopes. And at near the end of that 2 year period, all of a sudden I started thinking, I wonder if I should get out of this. I wonder. And there was a sense of confusion. And the fact of the matter is, there wasn't any confusion at all. It was just a very clear knowing, this is not a good situation for me to be in. And all of that time that had been spent, all of that energy had to be walked away from. All of the potential for financial reimbursement or compensation just had to be walked away from. And I spent probably 2 or 3 weeks in what I would have called in the past confusion until I was willing to just acknowledge, yeah, I'm not really confused about this at all. I just don't really want to have to do what my higher guidance is telling me to do here. I really would like to be able to just pretend that what's true isn't true. I would really like to just be able to ignore my guidance here. And, you know, most of us who've been doing this kind of work for any substantial period of time can tell you it's never a good idea to ignore your guidance. I think it was Martin Luther who said, you know, to the tribunal that he was facing, that it wouldn't be right or safe to go against his guidance. It never pans out for the better when I ignore my instincts, my intuition, my insight, my inspiration, whatever word you want to give it. And yet, it can easily have, for me, easily gotten disguised as confusion. And yet it's never really been confusion, it's just been avoidance. It's been an ongoing wish that I could avoid what I know to be the right thing to do. And at times it's been walking away from a relationship that just wasn't healthy and, you know, just wasn't ever going to change in the way that I would have hoped it would. And, you know, most of us who are a certain age have had the experience of, yeah, you know what, I don't really want to have to start over. I don't want to have to go back to dating. I don't want to take a chance on someone that I don't know yet. And that's one of the many reasons that people end up staying in unhealthy, unproductive relationship patterns for long periods of time, because they don't want to face the fact that there's an internal guidance system telling them this isn't good. This isn't going to be good. And if I'm willing to put that word confusion in the reality management worksheet, in the space that's designated for whatever emotion I'm feeling at the time, and I'm willing to just have the goal be, I want to figure this out, and cancel the goal to figure it out, and breathe and soften, and ask, truly, willingly ask to be shown, what's the hidden part of my own mind that's actually generating this state that I'm calling confusion? I'll start to see what it is that I've been turning away from. And when I start to see it clearly, it gets much easier to act from my insight, my intuition, my higher guidance. The same thing was true with overwhelm. I was absolutely amazed because I was functioning on the belief that I was overwhelmed because of life circumstances, about how many things were demanding my attention at one time. It never occurred to me prior to a little bit before engaging Michael Rice's work, that I might actually be generating this emotion, this feeling of overwhelm, and that it wasn't being done to me from the outside. And it was quite the shock to my system, that I could choose for love, I could choose to just use a tool and ask to be shown, how is it that I'm creating this? How can I step out of denial about the fact that I'm the one creating my experience of life and step into closer and closer to 100% responsibility for my experience of life in the moment, and just watch how the shift happens. And that's what we're supporting people in doing with this work. That's what the Way of Mastery is calling us to, choosing again in each new present moment for love, for responsibility, for the realization that we are always safe. There's nothing of value that can be taken from us, and nothing of value that can be added unto us. And if we're willing to step into that realization, if we're willing to ask to be shown what our conscious logical mind can't show us, we will probably experience life-transforming change in what would have previously seemed an impossibly short period of time. It does take some effort. It does take some time. but nothing like what I have feared over the years prior to having access to these tools. So our call in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we've got about 14 minutes of time left to entertain your comments and questions. There are quite a few people on the call, no one in the chat room that I can see. And we have plenty of time for a comment or a question. I have a number of people I'm working with at this stage in their lives are going through grief. Lots and lots of grief. Lots and lots of changes in their lives that they don't want, that they would never have asked for. And yet, most people in our culture acknowledge these things happen in the flow of life. Area code 903. You're in the air. Who do we have and how can we support you?
Good afternoon, Dr. Tim. This is Rome speaking. And
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear who you say you are.
Oh, Rome.
Rome?
Correct.
How can we support you?
Well, I am regarding your statement just now, which, you know, really has me thinking about, you know, just the gut feeling and, you know, trying to, well, all the things that you said. And I was wondering, and I'll take myself off of mute here because I've got stuff going on in the background, but, well, when it comes to that gut feeling and not listening to it, we'll just say in a relationship, and, you know, allowing things to go on before you're finally kind of, you know, face the facts. How do you look at that in relation to, you know, forgiveness coming from the Aramaic, if you will, you know, the gut feeling of something maybe not being right, but then trying to, you know, I guess, mend it through forgiveness?
Well, so the idea is that forgiveness in the Aramaic is removing everything that doesn't belong, anything that's less than love from your energy system. So if you're getting a deep insight, intuition, inspiration, gut feeling that says a change is the healthiest thing to do here, and then there's a part of your mind that says, I don't want to do that, then the part of your mind that says, I don't want to do what is healthy and right, is the part that's unlike love, and that would be what I would use forgiveness on. I would do the forgiveness work. I would forgive as to the part of me that doesn't want to do the next right thing, because the next right thing might require time, intelligence, money, and energy that I don't really want to spend, or I don't want to have to be inconvenienced. So I would use the forgiveness tool to remove the part of me that wants to argue against what my insider intuition tells me is the best next right thing to do. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And it's making more sense. I think I still have to process it a bit more because, you know, I think it makes sense in my head, but I'm waiting for my heart to connect because I believe there's just some things were just hardwired to just see a certain way. But yes, I'm going to meditate on that, and thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. And the point of this work is that anytime I'm feeling something tight or tense, sad, scared, angry, that's the perfect target for the reality management worksheet, for the forgiveness process, to find a way to look inside myself and figure out, okay, how am I creating this feeling of tightness, tension, sadness, fear, hurt, and then I use the reality management worksheet to figure out, okay, what's the thought I'm using to create the negative emotion I'm experiencing? And then what's the goal that my mind is telling me really should be happening or is the only way for me to be happy again? And then I just put that in the worksheet and say, I'm going to cancel that my goal for this to happen. I'm going to cancel my thought that's generating all of this negative emotional state. And I'm going to put myself in the most open, allowing space I can manage and ask to be shown. What's the hidden part of my own mind that's creating all of this? What's keeping me from being in the bliss state in this moment? The bliss state that is the natural product of realizing, as the Way of Mastery said over and over again as I was just reading, I and my Creator are one. I've never been separated in truth from the energies that created me. There's nothing of value that could ever be added unto me and nothing of value that could ever be taken from me. And so how is it that in this moment, rather than experiencing that conscious awareness of that true experience of creation flowing through me, how am I creating something less than that? That's what happens in the worksheet process. I ask to be shown, what am I doing to block myself in this moment from the bliss of knowing that I'm one with all of consciousness and creation? And if I step into that awareness, if I'm willing to see, and of course, it may not be so easy for me to see and acknowledge how I'm creating the dream of separation in this moment. I may not want to start over or to take full responsibility for what I've created in my life experience because it might require that I do more breath work, that I take time out from the busyness that I've scheduled in my life or that I recognize that what I've chosen to spend most of my time, intelligence, money, and energy on is not what I'm really here for. That's the idea of waking up to the fact that my highest guidance in the moment might be suggesting that I do something I don't really want to do. It's not the easiest thing to do. It may be the right thing to do, and yet it may not be the easiest thing to do. So I hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does. And once again, I thank you for that. And if I missed part of something you said, I just tuned in. So I apologize for any redundancy.
No problems. We're always grateful for the call. And you can always listen back to the archives for the part you might have missed. Is there anything else we can support you with today?
Not at this time. You've given me something to think about.
All right. I will mute you so you can listen to the rest of the show. Thank you for the call. We got about 5 minutes left. Anybody else have a comment or a question? Anybody else have a thought about how confusion might be the product of your own mind and your product of your actual avoidance of your own higher guidance? That's, you know, one part of the people I've been dealing with so far this morning. As I was talking about them, they really have a hard time because of the conditioning of their childhood. They really have a hard time seeing themselves accurately, seeing themselves as highly competent and worthwhile and worthy of a healthy relationship. And so they're stuck judging themselves as not enough. As I mentioned in the talk earlier, that the whole idea of judgment itself being error, and that's so foreign to the Western mind and the Western concept of things, where we're taught to judge everything. And we're taught to have our beliefs that we want to fight and die for. And anybody who doesn't believe like we believe, we should fight against them or get into a debate with them to prove them wrong. Whereas these teachings are telling us, you know what? Life is in this flow. And when you get into the flow of life and just allow and extend that flow, it's going to go far better than you ever could have imagined. And every time you want to fight against the flow, every time you want to say you think you know better than the flow of life, that's the dynamic that you're using to create your pain, your fear, your sadness, your tension. And it isn't necessary. That's what these teachings are trying to tell us, is that, you know, we, within the world that we've created, within what appears to be this physical world, we've created this sense that we have to struggle. We've already had a couple lessons. One of them says the way is easy and without effort. And another lesson that says all events are neutral. Well, our Western mind and our Western training is pretty much the opposite of that. So, you know, what's going to be the truth? What are we going to use to try and find something that works better? Well, the process most of the time is removal. Removal of whatever doesn't belong. You don't have to, Way of Mastery and Course in Miracles both say the same thing. You don't have to go create love. You don't have to go create joy. All you have to do in the system the way it's set up now is find all the ways you're hiding from yourself. You're blocking yourself from being in the flow and experiencing your true nature as love. As you remove those obstacles, you are instantly aware of the truth of your nature and the truth of the nature of the beings of brilliance and light that surround you, all of your brothers and sisters, and joy, bliss, life, love is the result. So you don't have to go searching for love. You don't have to create love. You just have to remove the barriers to the awareness that that is your true nature, and it's your birthright to live in that experience moment to moment. And if you're not, for whatever reason, aware of that or living in that, in this work, the invitation is to pick up the tools and to just consistently over time, gently, being gentle with yourself, apply the tools. One breath session at a time, one reality management worksheet at a time, one EFT tapping session at a time. And in that process, you're very likely to remove the blockages to your experiencing yourself as you were created to be. So I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
You're welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Monday, April the 15th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael a moment to dial in, and hope everyone had an awesome weekend. And Michael and I did a lot of running around, getting some things done this morning, went to the chiropractor and got adjusted, and are in an awesome space, and we hope that we hear from you. So, you know, Michael will be going over the enlightenment again. But if you have a question or a comment that doesn't even have anything to do with the enlightenment, please raise your hand. Press 1, and it pops a little hand up, and we know that you want to talk. And so Michael's with us, and so I'm going to say, welcome, Michael. Not hearing you.
Thank you, Bert, and welcome, everybody. Are you hearing me now?
Yes, thanks.
Oh, cool. So welcome, everybody. Delighted and honored that you're here. And then we get to look at the next level of this amazing first century Aramaic process of healing, looking at the real healing work of the great physician. And I know that several of you who listen have done the codependence to interdependence workshop. And I just had an interaction with someone that gave me a whole new look, a whole new picture of this dynamic of codependence. And so I'm going to just shift over to some notes here and sort of lay that power person dynamic out once again and take a look at just another refinement that to me was kind of mind-boggling to take it all at the next level. So for those who perhaps haven't been familiarized with the workshop, Codependence to Interdependence, in that workshop, we introduce a concept of what we call a power person. A power person is the person who, one, had more power over your life than you did at some point. Usually it's a parent, though not always. Two, was not functioning as a human being. That parent was not functioning out of love. And three, the child perceived the circumstance as survival. Those three events happening simultaneously opens the energy field of the person involved wide open to where they simply become a sponge. And again, it's usually a parent and a child, but actually there's one gentleman I worked with back a couple of years ago, and he had been in his 70s. He was in a store that was robbed, and somebody held a gun to his head, and he just, you know, went right into that power person dynamic. So it isn't necessarily a child, but usually it is. And we can have more than one power person. But I had an interaction with someone and had done a significant amount of work with them over a period of several years. And so was pretty well acquainted with what the power person dynamic was. And one of the things that we know is that once this power person dynamic is installed in someone's mind, again, literally, when those three things occur, the energy field of the child or the person involved, just it moves out of all reasoning, all ability to block energy, and it just becomes a sponge and literally sucks in every energy, spoken and not spoken. You know, if the dynamic is one where, let's say, the power person is enraged but doesn't say a word, the child still draws in that energy, and it becomes the foundation of the behavior for the rest of their lives. My offering is, literally, once you understand this power person dynamic and have the eyes to see and the ears to hear what it's about, you'll see that it literally runs the whole world. I don't care whether you're in a business situation, government, you know, sports, I don't care where it is, family, community, this dynamic runs the whole world. And it's all part of the false perceptual system of the mind. And because of the survival dynamic involved here, whenever it's resonated into activity, it controls behavior. So a person who has had that dynamic installed in their minds is limited to three behaviors throughout their whole lives. Until that dynamic is resolved, they're limited to three behaviors. And the behavior that they will do will depend on the level of stress that they're under. When there's little or no stress, people will do whatever they did to get along with their power person. We call that their normal persona. When stress starts to build, they'll shift out of doing what they did to get along with their power person, and they'll shift into doing what they did to resist and survive with their power person. And then when they become ultra-stressed, they'll do what their power person did that they hated the most. Runs the world. And the refinement that came across, came clear for me in this interaction, knowing fairly well over a period of years and from personal code evaluations and such what the power person dynamic was, I watched this person going under stress over something that was totally and completely a falsity, totally and completely based on a fantasy, and being confronted in that fantasy, up went their stress. Someone is normally a very rational, very intelligent, very well-accomplished person. But once the goal for something that, at least as I see it and understand it, is not true, the goal for that to be true, what became so strong that it just flipped out into this power person dynamic. And this is someone who has had, over the period of their lives, many, many losses, like major, mega losses from childhood, being stolen from by a parent as a child, or at least what in their mind was stealing. In the business world, having had businesses that were very successful that all of a sudden were just taken away, businesses just lost, like major money type situations. Having a retirement up in the hundreds of thousands of dollars and the company folding and loss. And it's just the repeating pattern of the power person based on an early experience with mom emptying his piggy bank became a dynamic of loss. And as I watched the scenario unfold, person sent a text to the person they were interacting with that they were out, they were leaving the relationship. And the bottom line of their communication, literally, word for word, was, you lose. And it was just for me, a whole different level of insight in watching how people set up energies to come and bite them. And when one thinks they can successfully pull off, it's like the power person becomes a god to them. And so when one thinks they can successfully pull off the power person dynamic and deliver to someone else the blow their power person delivered to them, they think they're the ones with the power and they're successful being able to deliver that blow. You lose. That literally was the dynamic that they had their power person do to them. But the insight that I got or that I saw, and I just invite everybody to look at it and see how it fits you for you. And if you have any feedback, would love to hear it. But to be able to deliver that blow to someone else was like, oh, I get to be God. It's like the power person is God, and I get to be God because, look, I get to do the same thing. And it's all based in delivering energetic patterns that are based in hostility or fear. So the non-being mind successfully thinks it has displaced God and has the satisfaction for that moment of being on the throne. Look at this. Look what I was able to do. Never being conscious of the fact that by engaging in that dynamic, they reinforced and created the next round of blame toward whoever in the world is going to come do it to them again. It was like the invitation by being able to deliver that power person message, you know, gotcha, you lose, sets the energy up of calling in someone, maybe someone from next door, maybe someone from the other side of the world to show up and make sure that they lose again. So the satisfaction of delivering to others what my power person unleashed on me, if I'm in that role, feels like power, but it's really self-destruction. Because only energies delivered through love to self or others will uplift our lives. Everything else leads to disintegration. So it was, for me, a new way of seeing how people recreate, set up the energy fields that draw whatever it is they hate the most right back into their lives. Again, you know, it's the core of why is this happening to me again. So when one has a thought disorder related to a power person and they're under stress because they've denied, because they've blamed the power person for what's going on inside of them, they've dissociated from the thought disorder that underlies their pain. And we know what happens when I deny, when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, then I have to dissociate from the real cause. Because I said to my mind, I'm not allowed to see that anymore. So I now create an unconscious mind. And what will happen in that case is that thought disorder will be put into one's brain's image, one's perceptual construct of somebody else, and somebody else shows up with that thought disorder as something that one perceives belongs to another person, but it's all a projection. Remember, when one denies, dissociate. Dissociate means hide. Somebody, when I hide something, I put energy into it. You know, in order to put it away, I have to push it down. To push it down, I put energy into it. I push that energetic pattern literally, energetically out into the world, and whoever's in the world that resonates with it is going to tend to be drawn to me. And when they do, then they do the behavior that resonates that hidden power person dynamic. And once a power person dynamic, once any thought disorder is resonated, there's one of two things you can do. You can either stay in denial and talk about them as though they're the problem in your life. Look what you've done to me. Look at how much pain I'm in. The only thing that can cause me pain are the energetic patterns within myself. Someone else can't cause that in me, but someone else can resonate that in me. So when I push down the power person thought disorder, the core thought disorder, I send that energy out. I draw somebody in. They do the behavior. The behavior resonates that part of my mind. I use that data, because it's hidden from me, I unconsciously use that data to formulate my brain's image of them. They show up in my mind with my problem attached. And I will then tend to speak or behave. Remember, ultra-stressed, one does what they did, pardon me, one does what the power person did to them that they hated the most. So now this person speaks in what they think is their own voice, but it's really the power person's voice coming through. The message they deliver is exactly the blow that the power person whacked them down with in early childhood. There's this false, I'm the one with the power. See, I get to deliver this blow. I get to be God, and I get to deliver this blow to this other person. But, of course, as the worksheet says, I get the original, they get the carbon copy. Who gets the blow first? So the mind in that state is totally false, totally lying, But we'll until we resolve that power person dynamic in ourselves, then when it's resonated into activity, that's what's going to run our behavior, run our thoughts, run our feelings. So, you know, the bottom line of this particular person's dynamic was, right from a very young boy, kid who worked hard and saved money, and mom came in one day, had a need, and took it. The conclusion was loss and pain. And it's repeated all the way up in this person's, I think, about well into their sixth decade, still doing it and turning around and unconsciously delivering that blow of you lose to somebody else. So just remembering that everything that comes from perception, up in perception when we're under stress, talk about how it's somebody else's fault, is all a lie. The other thing I can do in that case is go, oh, I realize there's something very uncomfortable in me moving here. I think I'll move into responsibility communication. That's why our intensive ties together codependence and responsibility communication as a practicum. Because the alternative is I can step into responsibility communication. I speak and own my own thought disorders rather than project them into my brain's image of others and blame somebody else and play the game out once again with somebody else. I get to go, oh, this is mine. I get to move through this. And rather than turning it into perception, I get to apply forgiveness to it. So under stress, the message that one hated, but incorporated into perception of others and themselves, they speak of someone else, which unconsciously, if you can be the observer of your own fear and hostility-based states, give you the opportunity to see when you were told what you were told and what's not true and how to own, to speak responsibly about that. And the difference between, you know, in the communication, did you hear what I think I said workshop? We have two forms of communication. We have what we call projection communication. Whatever's moving in me, whatever my mind makes up out of what's moving in me, I tell the world and I tell you that it's about you. You know, so if you do a behavior that triggers anger in me, then if I'm in this codependent mode, then my language is going to be how you made me angry. Now, you showed up, you resonated my anger, but projection, I say you made me angry. So I want you to be responsible for what's moving inside of me. When I shift into responsibility communication, I speak out, I step out of that projection language, I speak into responsibility language, and it's like, whoa, same circumstance, wow, all that stuff that just happened, and rather than you made me angry, that really triggered some anger in me that I realize it's a thought disorder I need to clean up. My God, I'm starting to look at this, and this looks just like what happened to me when I was 8 years old. Yeah, that's the power person dynamic. The mind is a liar. It is the father of liars. Remember Yeshua, we talked about, said, your mind is a liar. It's the father of liars. There's no truth in it. None. Perception, the constructs of the mind are always fake and false. Because they, even if they're accurate, they can be accurate. I mean, the truth might be they did it. And it matches your power person dynamic. But they may have done whatever it was. But the thing to get is the constructs of the mind, perception, are nothing but constructs of the mind. They're nothing but reflections of the past. Even if they're absolutely accurate about what happened in the world, they're still not what happened in the world. Because they're coming from carbon-based memory. And by definition, coming from carbon-based memory means the past. What does a carbon atom look like? 6 electrons, 6 protons, 6 neutrons. Recognize that number? 666. What is that? The mark of the Antichrist. So in responsibility communication, I speak from the mind of the Christ. Christ in me, the mind of love in me that experiences actuality as it is and lives in the world that the Creator created. Or carbon-based memory, and for everything that happens in your life, carbon-based memory if you haven't resolved the thought disorders that underlie it, carbon-based memory is going to shoot up a picture about somebody else and how they're the cause of what's moving in you. When I shift into responsibility language, and I get to go, oh, whew, here's my anger again. What's my anger about? Oh. Wow, got to breathe on that one. What's that anger about? Oh, I lost. Oh, I lost when I was a kid. Mom, I lost when that business deal. Oh, I lost when that company folded. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of retirement funds just disappeared. Loss, loss, loss. And then living in projection, and all that's resonated. What's the behavior? You lose. What's the language? It's the power person's voice speaking through us, but we think it's our own. Hope that makes sense for everybody. It may open the space for a conversation or two, because it's, while it's a very simple dynamic, at least I should say, for me, it's a very simple dynamic. It's a workshop I've been doing for 30 years, and as far as I know, the closest you'll find anything to do with this dynamic, understanding this, in the ancient scriptures, you hear Yeshua saying, or you hear the scripture saying, the sins of the fathers will be passed down into three and four generations. But that's about as far as it goes. And until one resolves the power person dynamic in themselves, when there's no stress or little stress, they'll do what they did, get along with the power person. Oh, Mr. Ms. Nice Guy. Starts to build, they'll do what they did to resist and survive with the power person. Oh, they go from being Mr. Ms. Nice Guy to being Mr. Ms. Snarky. If you're married to this person, you've been married for 5 years, and you haven't seen them in that spilt up stress space, all of a sudden you go, what just happened to you? I thought you were Mr. Ms. Nice Guy, and here you are being Mr. Ms. Snarky. What happened? Stress went up. Second level power person dynamic kicked in. And you go, but I don't even know who you are anymore. Yeah, that's right. And when that happens, one of the challenges in relationships, because it's through our relationships that we get healed, when that happens, it's not going to be long before there's going to be enough stress built in that relationship that the other person in the relationship, is, unless they're very conscious, is going to tend to start to play out the same power person dynamics. Now we have a battle of the matching bags of garbage, and until somebody, one or the other, both wake up and go, oh, I think I'll shift into responsibility communication, the whole game becomes the blame game. So after 5 years, you've been reliably functioning as Mr. Ms. Nice Guy. Now all of a sudden you're Mr. Snarky. I don't know if I want to be with Mr. Ms. Snarky. Oh, there's trouble in paradise. This is the phrase. We respect this stage in relationships very well in this culture. It's called the honeymoon is over. Now, really what it is the healing has begun. The next level of intensity of healing has begun, and it is the most profound opportunity through relationship to heal, because you've done enough work, you've done enough connectedness to actually start to go to those places and support each other in it. But carbon-based memory, when it holds this dynamic unresolved, kicks it in, fills awareness with it, and it literally that construct from carbon-based memory. And again, if it's in carbon-based memory, it was put there sometime before now. If that means it is from the past. If something from the past is building your perception now, again, even if the data is accurate about what's actually going on in the world, it's still from the past, so it's fake. It's a lie. Even if it's accurate. And what will tend to happen once you get the power person dynamic going to that next level in both parties, each one will tend to move farther and farther away from being there to generally see fulfill and support the goals of their partner. and then they'll move into that ultra-stress place. If you want to watch the dynamic play out, watch the film The War of the Roses. There it is. And as far as I know, in history, no human being has had the opportunity to work this through as clearly and as crisply as understanding that dynamic. So again, when people become ultra-stressed, you listen to people, let's say, after they've had their divorce and all, and they talk about that person. It was kind of cute. We watch AGT oftentimes at night. There's a young girl that got on with singing, and she had shared that, you know, she'd broken up in a relationship, and they asked her, well, you know, does that person know you're here? She said, no. Well, if they were here, what would you say to them? And she kind of shyly said, well, I'd say, hi, hope you're doing okay. And then she turns her head a little bit and says, well, not really. And, you know, the way people, like, yesterday you cherished me, and today you think I'm, what's going on? What is that about? That's called the honeymoon is over, and it is the perfect place for people who come together through resonance, through matching bags of garbage, to heal themselves. But you can't keep doing projection communication and heal. You got to shift into responsibility communication. Oh, yes, my stress is up. Yes, I have goals active here. Yes, I have pain moving. Yes, this pain is mine. I've been here before, done this too many times. Like, I've worn out the rodeo shirt. So what are you going to do about it? Still keep talking about everybody else? And for me, again, for those who've done the codependence intensive, which is the one intensive that we have as a self-study, if you want to take that work on and take things to another level. But that's where the deepest opportunities to heal ourselves lie, but you can't do it while you're living in projection, and you can't do it without forgiveness. And forgiveness, again, if you're new to the show, is nothing to do with I'm going to let you off the hook for what's moving inside of me. If it's moving inside of me and I'm in pain, I want to be about removing what's moving in me. The whole, you know, carbon-based memory culture, which is basically what runs our whole culture, is into, oh, yes, I'll forgive you. I'll let you off the hook because this is moving in me. That's a totally codependent idea. Never forgive anybody for anything, but forgive continuously. Got to get to the point where you forgive continuously, and the opportunities abound. This insight came for me this morning early, and because it was so profound for me, I just stayed with it and breathed into it. And it opened a whole new layer for me of healing in terms of my interaction with and the dynamics I still hold in me about my father, who was a pretty abusive guy. It's like this, the whole, that for me, the excitement of this insight was the gift it gave to me of the next piece of my puzzle, of my work, of my healing. So there's no pretense here that anybody's finished. You know, we're all on the path. We're all in the same boat. But we can be here to support each other. And there's nothing like a little help from our friends. So I hope that fits.
You have two hands up.
Great. Let's say hello.
And the first one may be left over from Dr. Tim. Roan, did you raise your hand a second time? You're on the air.
Oh, you can hear me right now?
Hey, you're loud and clear, Roan. Welcome. How are you doing?
Oh, okay. Thank you. That was from the previous show, but I, funny enough, did have something that I was going to ask about perhaps later in the show.
Let's go for it.
Sure. Yeah. So in regards to, I'm sorry, that was totally caught me off guard.
Okay.
In regards to the breathing exercises, I've heard, you know, this mentioned a number of times, and It's even been said it's an extremely important part of the process. Where can I would I find more about that on the website?
Well, it's not a a tool that we just hand to people. I don't teach about it. I don't write about it. It's something that we only do in person. It's such a powerful tool that it's not something you can just say, here, take this and go play with it. It's something that people need instruction and support in doing. It's a tool that ultimately is meant to be used for yourself, by yourself, but the initial phases we only do in person. And it's part of every intensive that we do. And we do a monthly Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Workshop, which is happens to be this weekend. And so if it's something you want to participate in, we do have that workshop. It's Saturday morning and Sunday morning at 11 o'clock Eastern time both days. Saturday usually goes for 3 to 4 hours. Sunday usually goes for 1 hour to 2 hours. So if that's something that you want to participate in, you could if you could let me know, and I'll or drop Jeannie a note or text, and we'll arrange to get you registered if you want to do that. But it's a way of using the breath. You'll notice that anybody and everybody, when they're in some sort of what to them is unresolvable trauma they don't have the tools to handle, they hold their breath or they radically alter their breathing pattern. I know over the years I've had dozens and dozens and dozens of people who have told me, oh, yeah, my mother used to tell me how I'd hold my breath till I turned blue. Yeah, that's a way of not wanting to feel, not wanting to deal with things. So if you notice somebody when trauma starts to move or they perceive that trauma is approaching them, they'll tend to pretty radically alter their breathing pattern. And what that does, in the ancient teachings, they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain. That wasn't about a purple curtain in a church. Temple is this body-mind unit, and the veil is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. So you look at the average person, and they're holding their breath. They're locking it down, and that's the way they cut themselves off physiologically from feeling and dealing with what's moving in their minds. And so the veil has to be opened. It has to move. And when that happens, whatever's been in hiding then becomes accessible, and the breath processes through it. So it's the veil, again, is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. Three levels of mind, three levels of functioning of the firing of brain cells. Conscious, what you're aware of at the moment. If I say, don't think about the color of your car, what resonates in your mind? Something about the color of your car. So a moment ago, the color of your car or whatever information moved is subconscious. I resonated. I put forward a frequency with my voice. Those brain cells fire. You become conscious of it. So conscious and subconscious are continuously changing places. But then if I ask the question, well, what's the core of the issue that you're dealing with in your life that you're not sure you really want to work through? What is that core? And notice what happens with your breath. And whenever I ask that question, 99.9% of people report back to me that they hold their breath because the question resonates. What's in the unconscious and the holding of the breath keeps that information unconscious. If you listen to psychologists today, they'll tell us that somewhere between 80, 90, 95, some estimate as much as 98% of our quote-unquote thoughts are unconscious. And when you look at that, my offering is we're not designed to have an unconscious mind at all. And so when I properly apply the breath, I get to be able to start to deal with things that I and my bloodline have habitually held from ourselves, held in hiding all of our lives. And so to open that barrier is to open the unconscious and be restored to our natural state, would be my take. The only other place, if we do an online intensive or if we do a Heartland intensive, which we don't have anything scheduled at this point, the codependence to interdependence communication practicum self-study has the instruction in the work of doing still point breathing involved. And the only other place is, you know, I do a 3-day one-on-one personal intensive with folks, and I do that whole 3 days is focused in the breath. That's really the core tool of that personal intensive.
Okay.
So there are the different ways to access it, but it's the key tool.
Okay, great. I would like more information on that, and it seems that the question comes at a timely moment, seeing that it's this weekend. So I would appreciate that being sent over to me, and I can review it and see how likely that is from this time.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll be in touch with you after the show then.
All right. Thank you. I'll just hold back and listen to the rest of the show.
All right. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Ms. Jeannie, you've got another hand up?
I do, and it's 610. Ms. Susan, welcome.
Hey, hi. Michael, that was
welcome, young
powerful.
Lady.
Hi.
It boggled my mind this morning. I mean, I literally breathed.
Yeah.
I mean, really breathed for 2 hours this morning, big time.
Good for you.
In terms of what it opened for me and looking at. When I had that insight, and it's like, oh, my God, that's just monumental. So. Fun time.
And I don't have the right to ask, but since I'm working on a power person issue ongoing, I wondered if you could share some of the insights you did get about your dad, or is that just being too nosy?
No, that's not nosy at all. No, I've done a lot of work over the years on my dad. My dad was pretty violent and verbally and physically. I think I've shared with you before that from the stories I'd been told of his upbringing in Glasgow, Scotland, as a street kid there, I had a whole other level of insight into what he'd been through when I watched the movie The Streets of New York.
Wow.
And so I've resolved a lot of that, processed through a lot of that. And I've been pretty much in a space of peace with him. And that insight today, for me, led me to a place where, for the first time, and this is what I was doing as I was breathing, I could hold and embrace my father as I would my granddaughter. And just...
Wow.
That was kind of it was just to... To hold him was the end result of that process. And it was interesting. Actually, we had an appointment to go out this morning, and I was breathing away, and Jeannie came in and to tell me about the appointment. And just like seconds before she came in and touched me and said, Michael, we've got a half an hour getting ready to go. I had just gone through that with holding my dad, just like, you know, like 2,000% everything is A-okay, Dad, kind of thing. And just like maybe 10 seconds before Jeannie touched me and alerted me to that, a voice said, what if it's a boy? And it was like I was getting ready to go into a whole new level of process around something, and I don't have a clue what that meant.
Wow.
But that's what, just as she alerted me, it was getting time to go. I was in a still point, and it was like somebody said, what if it's a boy? Now, I don't know if that was around my own birth, if somebody said that, or was a memory. I don't know. I have no idea. I like, you know, came right out of it, and so I'll be doing more breathing on it when I have the space. And if something shows up, I'll certainly share it. But it was just a whisper that had just gone by. It was just, what if it's a boy?
God.
And then Jeannie alerted me.
Sentence. What if it's a boy? Like that might be bad, or. You were expecting a girl? Somebody was expecting a girl?
I don't know. I have no, there was no energy or emotion to it. There was no insight, you know, was it said about me being born? Was, you know, I have no idea. There was no, like, you know, to be announced.
Because
that was as far as I got with it. And it was, I had to, you know, get up and get moving. But I'll be doing some more breathing around it. But it was just a really tender space. And
I wanted to ask.
So the work goes on.
The man you were working with, were you working with him? And, or I missed his relationship to you. You were reporting on this man in his 60s who said, you lose. Okay. Were you so you were working with him?
Yeah. With someone I'd been working with, and this was a communication he'd provided to someone as a result of what I would deem to be a meaningless, based in fantasy argument going on.
Yeah.
But
you
the
know,
stress
as,
obviously was
you,
pretty high because basically he just said, like, I'm cutting this relationship off. And it was a relationship that, you know, as I understood it, was pretty valuable to him. But it was just like, I'm out of here. You lose. But it was like, when it was recent processing in our private session that he had shared that, you know, these losses throughout his whole life, that was like one of the, that was his, why is this happening to me again? And then to hear him report this, you lose, was just like, there it is. That's the whole.
There it is. Are you going to get to work with him more? I mean, I hear
we'll
just so
see what
tragic.
Unfolds.
Yeah. Well, the connection you made between codependency and power person, you know, you've probably said it a gazillion times, but sometimes, you know, when you say something, it goes in at a different angle.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a whole new level of insight for me to catch. Mm-hmm. And the key one was, I now, you know, that the person who's playing out of the power person dynamic, the unconscious thinking is, I've now displaced God and I get to be God. I get to deliver the blow that was delivered to me. And, you know, and of course the insanity of that is, who am I delivering the energetic blow to but to myself? I get the original.
Absolutely.
They get the carbon copy. So it was just, but watching how the non-being mind works in, you know, if it's vengeance, I get to take vengeance, then I get to be God. It's like, oh, my God, talk about twisted.
Oh, man, I know. The seduction of that moment of triumph is so, well, it's seductive, and it's tragic.
Pseudo-triumph, you say?
Result. What? Yeah.
Pseudo-triumph, you say?
Yeah, I didn't say pseudo, but I meant it. I mean, the so-called triumph, the feeling of triumph there is so tragic.
It's like I'm now the one with the powers. Wow, that was, and that's a good word for it, seductive.
Oh,
that's
man.
Exactly what it is.
Well.
And, you know, going back to a default conversation that comes up often on the show, I always go back to those disciples that were with Yeshua when he told them what they needed to do, and they say, too hard a saying, and they leave, you know. Too hard a saying, who can understand? And until you got the brain cells for that, I mean, I've been teaching that workshop for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally had the brain cells to go, oh, there it is, that's it.
Yeah.
So I can relate to them saying, too hard a saying, who can understand it? And they leave, you know, they leave and they never come back because, you know, somebody says, no, you can't do that vengeance stuff. You're going to destroy yourself. Well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This is my moment of triumph. What do you mean I can't do it? I'm damn sure I'm going to do it. And it leads to, it's a whole other level of destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Self-destruction.
And
you're energetically watching. Self-destruction.
Right, you're watching the self-destruction there.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
And it's
tragic. It must be
exactly.
Very hard to see.
Yeah. And another piece of the puzzle for me that fits as we're talking about this now is, and people play this game of, oh, I have to be, you know, out of a false understanding of, oh, I have to be good to please God. No, mm-hmm. I have to be good in order not to destroy myself. Good being,
yeah.
Be on the path where I only serve up energies that are based in love rather than those based in hostility or fear, because anything I served mm-hmm. up based in hostility or fear, I serve up to my own cellular structure.
Right.
It's like...
over and over and over.
And it ties in, and I say this just to kind of explore it a little further, in the church where confession is a requirement, a part of the religious ritual and belief, there are, at the end of quote-unquote confession, there is what's called the act of contrition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'm sorry. And it's... There's what they call the perfect and the imperfect act of contrition. The perfect one is, I'm sorry for having done this simply because I broke my relationship with you, Creator. That's the perfect act of contrition. But then they're allowed the imperfect act of contrition. And the imperfect act of contrition is, I'm sorry because if I don't be sorry for this, I'm going to hell. So it's fear.
Oh, yeah.
It's just mm-hmm. interesting how they've tried to handle it. A dynamic like that, because who understands it? Who knows what to do with it? So they allowed,
right.
You know, or they desired, they instructed, do the perfect one. But if you can't quite get to being the perfect one, you still got that rage, you still want to punch that guy in the nose, then do the imperfect one. I'm sorry for wanting to punch him in the nose because I'm afraid I'm going to go to hell. And
yeah.
that you know, in a pinch, that'll get you by. Which,
oh, God,
obviously, energetically isn't going to do it.
Right.
So it takes so much out of the realm of belief and just makes it like, oh, yeah, there's
yeah.
a really good reason for doing this. Although they made up one of, well, you have to do it because we got this big dude that created a fiery place that we're going to send you to if you don't do it.
Right.
It's like none of that fantasy stuff is necessary, that threat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just understand the dynamics behind it and clean up your mind. So what does that move for you, young lady?
Well, a lot, Michael. I'm thinking about my grandson, Jacob, who is beyond reach now with his rage and invective toward the very people who care about him so much. He's gone way beyond even his new father, his stepfather, who remained close to him when everybody else had to block him because of his cruelty toward them.
Yeah,
my
pretty vile
daughters. Yeah, you saw some of that. And by the way, Michael, he wrote me. He's blocked, but somehow a voicemail message came through, and he said, "Will you get this friend of yours to stop talking to me? You're triangulating and doing it." I have no. He referred to her as a girl, a woman. How dare you triangulate?
Yeah,
and I'm thinking, go ahead.
That was me. In our communications, he referred to me as a girl, or actually as a bitch.
Oh,
and,
oh wow.
Like,
I
well,
thought that must
and,
be what
and,
it
and
was.
He had, say again?
I thought that must be the person he was referring to was you, because
yeah.
I haven't spoken to anybody about him, you know,
yeah.
as bad-mouthing
well,
him, and he... anyway.
He was so... He knew so much about me. I mean, he had a litany of all the things he knew about me, you know, how I was white and I was rich and I grew up rich and I was a bitch. It's like, wow,
yeah.
The projection is pretty strong here, young man.
It is.
Anyway.
He does that to my my son. He won't speak to my son. He has my son on leave for PTSD with his work. And Jacob was telling him, you know, months ago now, you're a spoiled, white, rich, privileged, lazy son of a gun. I mean, he was letting him have it. And Jonathan, oh my God, if anybody, he really didn't know how to take care of himself. That's why he's in the state he's in now. He needs the tools like mad. Of course, that's a whole other tangent. But Jacob
right.
is doing this projection, all of it. And it is
I got that whole story.
You did. Oh.
Yep.
And,
yep.
But
and he thinks I'm a
person,
female to boot.
Oh, wow. And his power person is his father, but he is acting worse than his father. And there's an element of self-preservation that his father had. His father could apologize. Of course, it didn't last. You'd get a second round, third round, a fourth. I learned not to get very near that man because his apologies were so sincere and loving and sweet, and I would think, oh my God, you know, he really gets it. And then it was Jekyll and Hyde, but Jacob doesn't have the apology part at all. It's all ugly, and it's just mind-blowing.
Well, that's the three levels of power person dynamic. You know, mm-hmm. What do? I'm Mr. Nice Guy in my normal persona. Stress starts to build. Mm-hmm. Whatever I did to resist and survive with my power person, now I attack. And, you know,
yeah.
that's persona. The Greek word persona is a mask, and it's a mask that is generated out of carbon-based memory, and it's
mm-hmm.
who we think we are. And it sounds like probably the level of abuse that Jacob took on leaves him in a pretty painful place continuously.
It does.
And then when you add alcohol and drugs to that, that exacerbates
mm-hmm.
that whole thing. And of course, the alcohol and drugs are just, I'm trying to hide this, trying to anesthetize this pain.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well. Anyway. So.
And it's unfortunate that
it
only cracks when it cracks. That whole personality structure.
That's the thing.
Usually cracks under the stress of being at the bottom of the barrel. Unfortunately.
I think that's in the near future, because when he leaves college, he's on his own, and he has no resources. He has plenty of resources if he would use them, but he thinks we're supposed to provide those. And if we don't, that's the bottom he's going to reach, and I hope he really reaches it without jumping off a cliff.
Yeah,
so,
I'll join you in that, and holding
that
him
thought.
In safety. Yep, holding him in safety.
Well,
I don't envy kids coming up in today's world.
No. I don't either, because a lot of them really do need assistance. It's too hard when they get out of school to make their way in any way that's not going to just exhaust them with trivia, making money just
yep.
to pay rent. So I hope the adults who are around can help. In this case, we want to, and we can't. Not without just a total rescue, but you've
totally
heard that
enabling.
All before.
Yep.
Yeah. There's no responsibility being taken on that side at all. So, anyway, I keep coming back to that. My apologies. You know what I keep thinking is I am doing these retraining of the neuro pathways of the brain program.
Right.
I'm doing it to accompany Kim Bingham, who's having such... It's his language. He's doing it, and I'm
That's
watching
awesome.
A transformation. And so I'm thinking, well, I've been doing that all along. I use the tools. But the thing is about this, it is extremely repetitive. And I've been listening to your talk, so I hear a lot of repetition, and that's how it gets in. And
yes.
But this is programmed down to the nth. You step on certain plaques you write for yourself on the floor, and you say certain prescribed things. And to me, it seems like, oh, my God, it's like going to AA and hearing them say, hi, my name is Sue, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Sue. You know,
it sounds like a mechanical way of involving your body in changing your regulatory speech.
Absolutely.
I mean, it sounds like it's dealing with regulatory speech. And so you're using mechanical reinforcement, which is, you know, powerful because it moves the energy deeper into tissue. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Tim's finding something that's working.
I do readjust some of the wording of it because it's not responsible communication.
Right.
And I won't go into all that, but learning what I have from what you teach about that, I've changed some of the language to be more suitable, so more positive and reinforcing of the positive, not repeating the negative.
Right.
But it's a brilliant program. I'm only 2 days into it, only 2 days. So I'm really too soon to talk about it. But
right.
All I can say
I look forward to hearing about it as it unfolds.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, you're
hey.
Good about that. Because you're teaching your tools. You don't need to hear
well, you know,
about all this.
One of the things I've found is that everybody who's got any kind of success going in working with shifting the mind or the body, they're doing something that works, and because it's different, everything, you know, when we see the whole, I'm open to every piece of the puzzle. Like I've shared before that one of the things that, qualified anything that I learned to become part of the energy field work that we teach in our intensives, it was something that would take people into a still point. Because that still point is such a key. And so, my ear is always to the ground for something, anything else that fits and moves, because it's every human being has a different persona, a different way of being able to open. And if somebody's discovered a way to open and bring healing, I want to know about it.
Oh, that's nice.
Whatever
that's
it is.
Great. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, congratulations.
All right.
On that insight you had and the way you reported it. It's a keeper.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet for me. It was a whole new level of understanding with my relationship with my dad and being able to embrace him in a new way, a new level that I had not been able to do previously, you know, in terms of my own personal process with my dad. So it's pretty sweet.
That is wonderful. It gives people hope, me included, because, I've had some breakthroughs with my mother, but embracing her, that still hasn't happened. Appreciation, very much so.
But. Well, distinct difference, which I had never been able to do before this morning, was I could embrace him as deeply, as sweetly as I do Ari Rain. So
that
tells the level of meaning that
amazing.
It took it to for me. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, we're down to the last minute. So I'm going to say thank you, everybody, for joining us. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and we join you in it. Blessings. Thanks, Susan. Bye-bye.